Yes, so we're up to Perek Chaf. And again, it's a chaval that we're not able to always read every single pasuk. We're selective, but this is Hashem. We should eventually come back to it one point or the other. The Perek begins with one of the themes that Shlomo often talks about, and he often talks about the debilitating negative effects of drinking too much. This is something that Lefi Pshuto we do understand. And the way the biblical poetry works is it describes the wine as if the wine itself has a certain midah, meaning as opposed to the wine making me behave a certain way, the wine itself is personified as having a midah, and the midah that's described is late hayayin. Yayin is a leitz. Now, what is a leitz, right? Leitz is a scoffer, not taking things seriously. Really, it's a certain cynical attitude, thank you, a certain cynical attitude towards life in which nothing really is important. The only important thing is to eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow, we shall die. The Mesilas Yesharim writes, generally, that leitzanus is a very, very, you know, it's a bad meter generally, but it's a particularly destructive meter because it prevents a person from being inspired by Kedusha. Because every time there's a holy experience, you always make a joke about it, you put it down. So again, leitzanus is not the same as a sense of humor, and, or to put it the other way, the absence of leitzanus doesn't mean a person should not have a sense of humor about life. But when there's a constant notion of joking and putting things down, that creates a certain cynical attitude. And there's a very famous phrase of the Ramchal. The Ramchal writes, Leitzonus achas. One leitzonus, docha mea teichachas, can knock away 100 rebukes. You know, I don't know if you have ever experienced it here, but I remember in yeshiva sometimes, or I've been either as a rabbi or as a Talmud, you know, I've experienced it in both levels, where sometimes a certain mood is created, a mood of Kedusha, very serious, let's say it's after a shmooze or after a nigun, and people are just at a very, very fevered, almost emotional, spiritual place. And then somebody makes a joke. And the joke intrinsically might not be the worst thing in the world, but it kind of pops the bubble. And it kind of, you know, you're back to where you were. And that's an unfortunate thing. So here, Shlomo HaMelech condemns Yayin not because it puts you to sleep, but Yayin can create a sense of leitzanus in a person. That's very destructive. Now, leitzanus can be taken, not leitzanus, the condemnation of leitzanus might be sometimes taken as an extreme. They tell a story with Rabbi Kiveger. It's a very strict story, where Shlomo Eger, Kiveger's son, or Shlomo Eger was also a very, very big Talmud Chacham of Shlomo Eger. So when he was engaged to be married, so Rabbi Kiveger went to meet the Mechutanim at the Tanoim to sign the engagement contract. So Rabbi Kiveger said, it was mefursim for his anava, tremendous humility. Rabbi Kiveger said, I hope that my son has found a favor in your eyes. So for some crazy reason, this person said, your son is so wonderful, it's even better than the Mechutanim. Meaning better. So Rabbi Kiveger thought that somehow there was a remez that Rabbi Kiveger did something wrong. So Rabbi Kiveger begged the person, please, please tell me, what did I do wrong that you feel that way? I want to ask Mechil, I want to be Misakin. So now the person is really taken aback. This was taken into a much more serious way. So he says, no, chas v'shalom, I just made a joke. So Rabbi Kiveger says, uh-oh, late sonas. Not shy. He broke up the shidduch. Says, late sonas, we can't be seidel. You know, that's not for us to judge. That's a pretty strict standard in that way. That's why, by the way, just derech agav of nothing at all. I saw in Mishpacha magazine. Then Jonathan Rosenbaum, I'm going to have to ask him about this. Jonathan Rosenbaum said over a story that he heard about Rabbi Kiveger. I am totally convinced. The story is not true. It's not true both in terms of the person talking to Rabbi Kiveger and Rabbi Kiveger's response. The story, Rosenblum's thesis was that a person has to have realistic goals in life, and that you always have to stretch yourself But, you know, on the other hand, you don't live with frustration that you're not the gadolator or whatever it is, because you try to be the best that you can be, but be besimcha in terms of your achievements. Okay. So he says a story that somebody went over to Rebbe Tibager and said, you know, we were in cheder together, and when you were young, I remember you saying that you wanted to be the Vilna Gaon, but I see you didn't become the Vilna Gaon. What type of unbelievable mistake? And Rebbe Tibager says, "You're right, but if I wouldn't have wanted to be the Vilna Gaon, I wouldn't have become Rebbe Tibager." Every part of this story rings false to me. That somebody would say that to Rebbe Tibager seems false. Rebbe Tibager would say, "I want to be the Vilna Gaon." That wasn't his mindset. Second of all, I mean, Rebbe Tibager, if you talk about what is learned from the yeshivas, Rebbe Tibager's Torah is learned more than the Vilna Gaon's Torah. In the other issue. So the whole story does not resonate as true for me. Sometimes there are meisim that are just not true. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago a story of the Vilna Gaon that Rav Chaim Kanevsky said was absolutely not true. This was a story about a person who came to the Vilna Gaon with a bracha. He wanted a bracha and he was wearing a shtreimel, a lifshitz shtreimel. And the Vilna Gaon was eating cholent, and the Vilna Gaon put his hands on the shtreimel. And there was cholent on the Vilna Gaon's fingers, and there was stains on the shtreimel, and for the next 60 years, the person never cleaned it till he died, because he says, these are the fingerprints of the Vilna Gaon, how am I going to erase them? So Chaim Kanevsky said, it's not shayach, the Vilna Gaon would not, number one, he probably would not have eaten in such a way that there would be cholent on his fingers, and number two, if his fingers were dirty, al-sahiris and chayshin mishpat, he certainly would not have gotten somebody's shtreimel dirty. So Rav Chaim Kanevsky said it's a dover pashut that the mice is false. Maybe what happened was the guy had a dirty shtreimel and he wanted to give him a nice excuse why he didn't clean it. He says, "Oh, this is the Vilna Gaon's fingerprints. What do you want me to do?" Okay, all right. So you can't believe every mice that you hear, but be it as it may. What is highlighted in this first pasuk, again, the Gra doesn't really say that much here either, is, number one, the danger of leitzanus, of not being a cynic. In fact, and number two, the fact that yayin is a contributing factor to that attitude. But the midah that's being attacked is not drinking wine. The midah that's being attacked is the midah of leitzanus. Leitzanus is actually one of the hesperim the Maral says, why sometimes the children of Talmidei Chachamim sometimes might not become Talmidei Chachamim. Sometimes. The reason is like this. The reason is that sometimes a person from a simpler family looks at Rabbanim, looks at Talmidei Chachamim, looks at Rosh Hashivas with a sense of awe and a sense of reverence. And that reverence they give over to their children. And therefore their children have a certain cover of Torah and a reverence for Torah. And that inspires them. When you're in the inner world of Torah, you sometimes see that things are not as perfect as you might imagine. That, you know, there's infighting and there's rivalry and there's pettiness sometimes. And as a result, sometimes, you know, when you're too close to a system, you develop a certain cynicism and a sense of leitzanus. And that prevents you from being inspired by the Kedusha. Right? So leitzanus is like a cancer that can really eat a person inside. So one has to be very, very careful. Try not to be cynical about life. Yeah, there are a lot of things that are wrong. There are a lot of mistakes. There are a lot of things that are not always right. But one has to be attuned to the Kavod HaTorah and the goodness of Torah and the greatness of Tzaddikim. And then one can be inspired to walk in their ways. Now, the next pasuk I want to look at, again, I'm going through a few psukim, some of them quickly, is pasuk hey. And not, again, the Gra says almost nothing on this pasuk, but I just want to point it out because it's a very, very famous pasuk, and it's one of those psukim that perhaps, you know, people used to memorize verses in Mishlei. This is one of the verses that one perhaps could memorize. And that is, mayim amukim, eitza b'levish, V'yish tavuna yidlena. So what does this pasuk mean literally? Mayim amukim, deep waters, is etza, counsel, advice, in the heart of a person. But a person of understanding, yidlena. Yidlena is to draw it out. Like when you draw water from a well, you use a dali, a bucket. Now, what this is talking about is something that we sometimes don't focus on. And that is the notion of intuition within a person. The Gra said earlier, towards really the very beginning of the Sefer, that every person in reality has Ruach HaKodesh. There is a divine spirit. It is implicit in the idea that we are B'Tselem Elokim. We are in the image of God. And our neshamos are the breath of Hashem, the breath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chelek Elokam Mimal. The Zayar HaKadosh says, Man de nafich mi garmei nafich. When I breathe into somebody, I am breathing in my life force. So when Hashem breathes into Adam, Hashem breathes into Adam HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence, whatever that means. Again, it's hard for us to understand. Hashem made everything. He made cows and dogs and cats. But the neficha, the breathing in, is only by Adam. There's no other creature that God breathed into the essence of his life force. So that means every person has Ruach HaKodesh. Every person is capable of a deep understanding of what his mission is in life and what Hashem wants him to do. At an extreme level, like the Avos, this Ruach HaKodesh was so powerful that they intuited the Torah before there was a commandment. When we say the Avos kept the whole Torah before it was given, what does that mean? That doesn't mean Hashem told them there's a mitzvah of tefillah. They weren't commanded. But it means, and this doesn't even make sense to us rationally, it means the same way most of us could figure out that it's wrong to kill and it's wrong to steal, because we look at the world and we understand that the world would be a very bad place if people would steal and rob and kill. They understood that the world could not really work unless people put on tefillin and wore shatnez and wore shatnez. They saw in the DNA of the universe that this brings holiness and tikkun into the world. We don't understand that at all. We understand Hashem gives us a mitzvah, okay, but we wouldn't understand intuitively that that's what it is. And yet, this comes from a Ruach HaKodesh when you free yourself from Laitsanos, Taiva, and from Yetzer Hara. Then what comes out of you is a great, great wisdom. And therefore, this is what it's saying. The analogy is, within every heart of a person, there is great wisdom. Eitza is wisdom, but it's like mayim amukim. It's very, very deep water. Meaning to say, it's not something that I get in my first, my first glance or whatever it would be. But a man of understanding knows, if I work hard enough, I will draw up the deep water of understanding from the recesses of my soul. They say from the Shem of Chaim Volozhiner, the Gra's great Talmud, that when a person has a life decision to make, a person should sit and learn Torah for 2 hours without interruption. Without interruption. That clears away the static. It clears away the distractions. It clears away the Yetzer Hara. And then, whatever you think the answer to your dilemma is the Ruach HaKodesh that is speaking to you. Because you've cleared away all of the static and all of the distractions that throw you off course. But it has to be 2 hours without any interruption. It's a getter of a Nevuah Katana. It's a getter of a prophecy. So one point this Pasuk is making, therefore, is a very, very important point. That a person has a capacity of Ruach HaKodesh. It is deep water within a person. But it takes a lot of understanding to know how to reach that water. Because just as, if you're digging for water, some water might be polluted, and some water might have acid in it, and some water might have dirt in it. And you have to work very hard to get at the clean, pure aquifer, clean, pure water. So too, it takes a lot of understanding. In other words, sometimes that's why you sometimes need to talk to other people as well. Because am I speaking out of the goodness of my neshama, or am I speaking out of my yetzer hara and my self-interest and my taivas and my cynicism? How do I know what message I'm hearing? That itself takes great understanding. But there's another message here too, which is really implicit in what I said. And that is the notion that everybody has their own individual message, meaning to say that what you do with your life is miyuchad to you. It's not a question of following somebody else. It's not a question of imitating somebody else. It's finding your own derech. And I'll tell you that, Baruch Hashem, we have many, many gedolim, but one of the gedolim who was considered to be particularly very, very outstanding and miyuchad, perhaps in this he was the gadol ador, in giving personal aces, was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Again, gedolim also have their specialties, so to speak. And every gadol is, of course, knows Shas and Paiskim and the like, but the different gedolim are different. Rav Yaakov's particular unique koach, one of many kochos, was his ability to give eitzah, hadracha. If a person didn't know where to go in life, he would be able to kind of tell you. And in fact, because of this, I was one socha when I had to make a decision about college and other things. So my Rosh Hashiva, who was Rav Ruderman, was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's cousin. He wanted me to talk to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Ruderman himself was a gadol, and of course he talked to me. But so he arranged for me to meet Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. It was the only time I met Rav Yaakov. And Rav Yaakov at that time was retired. He was not a Rosh Hashiva anymore. He was living in Muncie. I shouldn't call it a retirement. He was busier in his retirement than he was as a Rosh Hashiva, but he had no official position. He was living in Muncie. And I was going to meet Rav Yaakov, so I was really, how old was I then? I was maybe 21 years old. So I figured, I better prepare all sorts of shtiklus Torah and that, because he's going to ask me what I'm learning. So I prepared all sorts of stuff. So I come to Muncie from Baltimore, and first I see an elderly man who looks like anyone's Zadie, grandfather, just sitting in shirt sleeves, no jacket, totally informal, mamish. He didn't want to hear anything. He just, he wanted to, schmooze and talk and, tell stories about Slobodka and the like. In fact, he actually told me a long word of his own, which I have to admit I didn't understand at the time, but when his Sefer in Chumash came out, it's actually in the Sefer. So, I heard that, now I know. Now I know the word because I saw it in the Sefer later. And we spoke, he gave me 3 hours of his time. And what's pretty amazing is, in the middle, people kept on dropping by. They just were so comfortable. They just dropped by. One person brought groceries, and one person came in to schmooze a little bit. It was like a constant notion. And then Rav Yaakov said to me, you didn't have lunch. He wanted to make me lunch, and he wanted to make a bed for me. He wanted I could sleep there, all sorts of things. This is what he was. But the reason I'm bringing this up is that Rav Yaakov had a mahalach, and this was not just true with me, I understand it was true with everybody, is he would never tell you what to do. He would draw out of you what you thought was right. And he would then adjust it, modify it, elaborate, give you an extra thing to think about. But he always wanted to hear where you were going, what was your direction, what was your netiyah, because he understood that a person's neshama, a person's intuition, is also a guide as to what he should be doing and where he should be going. Sometimes the Talmud Chacham sees that it's distorted, so he kind of has to adjust it or recalibrate it. But the notion is, it wasn't a single answer that you give to everybody, but you hear where the person is going. It's what Chazal say about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. B'derech shadar maisi leilech malichana. So that means the way that a person wants to go, God leads him. Now, we normally think of that in a duality of positive or negative, meaning I want to do good, God leads me to the good. I want to do bad, God leads me to the bad. In other words, that's the standard interpretation. But I would suggest that based on this pasuk, there's a deeper concept as well. That b'derech shadar maisei leilech malicha naisei is not simply a question of either I'll do mitzvahs or I'll do aveiros. But the particular approach that is where I want to go, based on my need of my neshama, that is where Hashem is going to bring me, because that's where I'm supposed to go. That's where I'm supposed to go. So if a person is nimshach to a particular limud, whether it's halacha or musar or bekiyas, Right? The goal is not to squelch that. The goal is not to destroy that. The goal is to understand that that is my way of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So the notion of the Mayim Amukim says, within every neshama, there is a deep water, refreshing water, that pure water, that gives a person guidance, gives a person hadracha. You know, there's a cute story. I don't know if any of you, you probably don't know him, but he was a prominent Rav in Baltimore, then he became the head of the OU, now he's emeritus head of the OU, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Weinrib, a chashuv person I know him from Baltimore for many years. So he tells the story, he had a very interesting career. He was actually a psychologist, he had smicha, he was a psychologist many years, then he became a Rav of a big shul, then he became the OU, and now he writes and gives shiurim. So he tells a story that when he first became a psychologist, he was mesupik if this was the right derech for him. Should he stay in learning? Should he go to kollel? Should he do different things? So he decided at that time, this goes back to like early 60s, really long time ago, he decided he would call the Lubavitcher Rebbe for an etzah. People go to the Lubavitcher Rebbe for etzahs. So he calls Lubavitcher Rebbe for an etzah, and of course the secretary picks up, Rabbi Krinsky, Rabbi Groner, two secretaries, and he says the shiloh to them, and they're supposed to relay it to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe will give an answer over the phone. So they tell the Rebbe like this. They tell the Rebbe, he says, there's a man from Maryland calling who has a shiloh. So the Rebbe says, the Rebbe like knows about everybody. The Rebbe says, tell him there's a good psychologist in Maryland, Weinrib, that can handle the problem. So tell him to go to a word of Weinrib. He's a Talmud Chacham, a Yodea Sefer. So this is, of course, this Weinrib calling up. So Weinrib says, this is him. So the Rebbe's answer was, well, tell Weinrib to consult with himself. And the lesson is actually exactly this lesson, that sometimes, you know, you have to learn. You know, this is a chilek. Again, I don't want to get into too many politics here, but, you know, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky himself said, Rav Yaakov has been dead now for 20 years, so it's been a long time. More than 20 years, 25 years. But Rav Yaakov once said that he was disturbed at what he perceived were shinuyim in the yeshivisha world. He said that the yeshivisha world becomes more like the chassidisha world in a way that he thought was not so good. And that is, in the yeshivisha world that he came from, the litvisha world, Slobodka, there was a concept that a person developed a capacity to think for himself, in which you absorb Torah, Hashkafa, you're connected to Rebbe, you're connected to Gedolim. But then you're given a path, you're given a mahalich, you're given a method of machshava, where you then have problems in life, and you're able to kind of figure out where you need to go. Now, among Chassidim, they had a different Messiah a little bit. Among Chassidim, the concept was, you went to the Rebbe, and you asked the Rebbe, oh, that's an oversimplification there too, but you asked the Rebbe for every little thing. So if Yaakov pointed out that he thought already 25 years ago that the Litvish yeshiva world was becoming more like a Hasidish world, in which people could no longer make any decision. Certainly with Avraham Kineski it's that way. You know, if you look at the shilas, people ask Avraham Kineski a million shilas about this and that and that and that and that, and he'll often say, do what you want. I mean, that'll be his tshuva. Yeah. His tshuva is, kirtzonecha! Do what you want. You know, should I have raisin bran? Or raisin. Should I have cornflakes or Cheerios? Kirtzonecha! Do what you want. Or with Rebbe Yashiv, I remember I saw a very interesting paper on Shidduchim. So, just to give you an example of it's almost a little bit of an OCD impulse on the part of the people. So there is a halacha. It's actually not a halacha, but it's a tzava from Rav Yehuda HaChassid, that a person is not allowed to marry. Right, a man should not marry a woman with the same name as his mother, and a woman should not marry a man with the same name as her father. This is not in the Shulchan Aruch, actually, but this is a tzavah of the Chassid. Some people are b'chlal not machmer on it. Some people are very machmer. It happened to be Rabbi Yashiv actually held that one should follow that halacha. But if the name is different in any way, like a different middle name, if one is Sora Chana, and the other is only plain Sora, then it's Mutter. And in fact, our Eitza sometimes is that even if they're both Sora, we'll add a middle name now. We'll now, but in order to have this Heter, the middle name has to be used. You can't just add some official middle name and never use it. So I saw a series. Okay, this is a yesod. It's a good yesod. You need to know this yesod. But then I saw literally 30 questions. Well, what if one is Sarala and one is Sarul? What if one is Sarala Rivka and the other is Sarala Rivka? You know. And here you have the Gadol Dor. He has to be bothered with people, you know, giving him, infinite permutations about, you know, what types of shinoyim are good enough. The answer is, you know the klal, figure it out. You know the klal. You know, this is not a shayla of an Isser Dorei. So you know the yesod. Figure out. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there is a concept. A person is supposed to think for himself to some degree. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky told me 25 years ago that he thought that B'nai Torah were not developing enough of a critical faculty to be able to look at life. Now, I mean, I'm torn because it's not so pushy. Because L'maisa, all of us need hadracha. We need guidance. We need rebbeim. We need to be connected. We can't be too independent. If we're too independent, then you have what is going on in the left-wing orthodoxy in the United States, where people just invent things like women's partnership minyan, and where women say psukei dezimra. I mean, whatever's going on, you don't need to know. But there's all sorts of crazy things that are going on because people are saying we can be independent. You know, we have smicha too. You know, so of course a person needs to be mechaber himself to das Torah. But there also has to be a chush. This is what the pasuk is telling me, of mayim amukim eitzah b'levish. A person has to know how to decide things, has to be able to decide things. Rabbi Saul Salanter, way before Rabbi Yaakov, once said that misnagdim and chassidim make two mistakes. Misnagdim think they don't need a rebbe, and that's a big mistake. And chassidim think all they need is a rebbe. And that's a big mistake. He says, you need a Rebbe, and you need to be able to also work things out yourself as well. Right, so that's the important, that's why this is a very critical pasuk. Mayim amukim eitzah b'levish. Because, you know, the emphasis is that even the greatest gadol, you know, whatever the question is, whether it's a family matter, whether it's you're a rav of a shul in Dallas, Texas, so you ask a gadol, right? But the gadol doesn't know the kehila in Dallas, Texas. The gadol doesn't know the dynamics of the family. You know that. Elamai, you have a certain negias. You have a certain vested interest, you know, et cetera. So you need the das Torah. But you then have to take the das Torah and know how to apply it to your situation. This is the lashon the Mefarshim say. Chazal talk about din emes la'amito, which in English it's hard to even translate. A true judgment to its truth. What is the double lashon of emes la'amita? So the Mefarshim say, din emes is what the true halacha is. But la'amito is how to apply it to this particular situation. Something could be a din emes, but it's not truly to be applied in this situation. That's a separate chachma. And sometimes the gadol will not always know that. That's why Rabbi Yashiv would often say, people would ask him shalos, he would often say, you have to ask this local person, because the local person knows the situation. Okay? So that's a sign. The sign of a gadol sometimes is the gadol sometimes will say, I'm not going to be machriya on a certain shaila, because it depends too much on the matzav. Okay, so this thing about mayim amukim is an important thing. But again, it's hard to balance. A person needs a rebbe all of his life. A person needs a rebbe. But the greatest thing about a rebbe is it gives you the koach. Now, this is what the Shlomo Yeshiv 7 says like this. He says a beautiful ha'ora. The Gemara says two things about Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis. He was Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe. Eliezer ben Horkanis was a Gadol Ador, although he was put in Cheirim b'Seif Yamav. But one thing is that when he would say Torah, he would say Torah that was such a big chiddush. Shalosh Shama Adamei Yolim. He said chiddushim that nobody ever heard before. Gvaldiga chiddushim and insights. There's another Gemara that says he never said anything he didn't hear from his Rebbe. He never said anything he didn't hear from his Rebbe. So that's a stirrup. One Gemara says he only said what he heard from his Rebbe, and the other says he says tremendous chidushim like a Mayan Amiskadra. Reb Zevin says it's not a stira, because what he heard from his Rebbe, nobody ever heard, meaning to say the following. Everything was based on his Rebbe, but he took what his Rebbe said and was able to be Mechadesh and build on it, based on everything that he was Mechabel, but he was then Mechadesh and he built on it. What did the, actually, Revere Simcha, the Arsameach, once said, he said, such a cute remark, he once said, what is the difference between me and the Rashba, he said, and the Ketzais. He says, the Ketzais knew the Rashba, and I know the Rashba. So what's the difference? He says, but the Rashba the Ketzais knew is not the same Rashba that I know. Meaning to say, the Ketzais knew the Rashba at such a deeper level. It was like a different Rashba. Everything Rabbi Eliezer said was based on his Rebbe. But because of his depth, he saw in his Rebbe's teachings all sorts of implications that other people didn't see. But it was all based on his Rebbe's Torah, which is the Masorah. And that's really the idea, that one should be a Mechadesh, one should be original, one should be able to apply things to new situations, but at the same time, it's all connected to that Masorah. That's the importance of this Pasuk, Mayim Amukim Eitza, Eitza Beleidish. Okay, let's go a little further. Let's skip down a little bit. Pasuk Ches is very Nogeya this time of year. The Pasuk says, Melech Yeshev al Kisei Din. When a king is sitting on the throne of justice, and of course that is, there's always a double meaning. It's a human king, and then of course it'll refer to Melech Malchei Amlochim. But when the king is sitting on the throne of justice, Mizareh b'einav kol ra. So what is the phrase Mizareh? So you'll remember that one of the malachos of Shabbos is Zoreh. Zoreh, not Zoreh, Zoreh. Zayin Reish Hey. Zoreh is a form of winnowing. That's when you have, it's really part of the borer process, part of the separating process, in which something is thrown to the wind, right? You throw the grain up into the air, and the wind will blow away some of the smaller pieces of chaff that are very light, right? Borer with a sieve, that's for stones and heavier things, but Zoreh is for the lighter particles that get blown away. So the Gra says that Mizar, it gives two pshats, and one pshat is Mizareh is connected to winnowing, and he says a very interesting thought. He says that this pasuk refers actually to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is the Melech that judges the world. Now this is the whole year he judges the world, but especially around Rosh Hashanah as the Yom HaDin and the like. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Zoreh the Ra. Now what does it mean to be Zoreh the Ra? So he says the following. He says a very interesting thought. And he doesn't explain it very much. He says that when you're Zoreh, all the particles become separated. Right? The wind blows them away. They're separated. So he brings from the Zohar that the Averos of Rishoim are bipiruda. Piruda just means the Averos are separated. Now what does he mean the Averos are separated? I think he's saying a very profound idea. And this is really a rachamim of Hashem. And that is that normally we look at a person and we say, you are what you do. You do bad things, you know, you're a bad person. You do good things, you're a good person. The Gra is suggesting that in the case of a yid, that's not really so. Because we have a tzelem elokim, because we have a holy soul, because there's a pintel a yid in which a Jew is connected to God no matter what, every single sin is indeed a sin. And because of those sins, there will be a din b'cheshbon. But they don't corrupt, and they're not reflective of the inner essence of the person. The inner essence of the person is still kadosh. That's what we say every day. Elokai, nishama shenasata bi Tahorahi. The soul that you gave me is Tahor. And that's the notion of Piruta, meaning as if to say, every Aveira is like an isolated Aveira. Well, I sinned today, I did one Aveira today, and I did one Aveira tomorrow. They're not combined together to say you're a Mushchas and you're a Rasha. As opposed to the tzaddik, to the righteous thing, we say, oh, all of these mitzvahs show they are a reflection of yourself and Elohim. Now, why is this significant? This is significant because it gives a person hope. It reminds a person that no matter how many aveiras I've done, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at each aveira as an aberration, as a yotzei min haklal, as something that is not reflective of your true essence. And that is why tshuva does not mean changing yourself. Tshuva means returning to yourself. You're returning to who you are. And that's the phrase. So according to this, this is a rachamim pasuk. Hashem looks at Ra and is mizareh. He scatters it as if to say, every sin is viewed as an isolated aberration and it is not mechubar. But that doesn't mean there's no onesh. That doesn't mean there's no midas hadin. But it means it's not mashchis, the etzem pinimius of a person's neshama. And that's important. That's what he means by the statements that the Rishoyim's actions are a piruta, meaning every time my taiva takes over, my taiva was machshel me today, my taiva will be machshel me tomorrow. But because it's always been piruta, it's always reversible. Because if the pshat would be, there's one road called the road of sin. Once I'm on that road, how do I get off? But there's no road called the road of sin. Today I made this mistake. Tomorrow I make another mistake. It's like every time you're going on the road again. So you don't have to go on the road. Right? In fact, the Gemara, they say me pi ha-shmua, that the Gemara used to say that, he was talking about davening, if the Yetzer Hara beats you in Shalach Lanu Avinu, well, that's a bad place to be. You don't have Kavanah there, you get him back in Re'ena Vanyenu. And if he gets you in Reina Vianyenu, then you come back with Rafaenu, meaning every single line, you have a new chance for Nitzachan. That's Bipiruda. The Averas don't really add up in that sense. Each one is an isolated, sporadic event, and therefore it doesn't affect me. That is what it means, Mizara, right? The notion of all of the actions are Bipiruda. According to that, this is really a message of hope and a message of Chizuk, that one should not give up. Now the Gra gives other pshatim. Again, there are a lot of different pshatim here. The other idea of mizara simply means Hashem weakens the power of Rishoyim in the world. Meaning, when Rishoyim as a group put too much tuma in the world, Hashem weakens their forces by scattering them. Now that actually is important. Some people say that that's why there's a great bracha that there's so much disunity in the Arab world. Now, the Arab world itself is dangerous enough for us. But when you have groups like ISIS, and remember, and it should continue, ISIS, Baruch Hashem, and should continue, has not been a threat to Israel. ISIS is essentially a threat undermining the stability of Arab countries, right? ISIS is undermining Syria. ISIS is undermining Lebanon, right? ISIS, right? So ISIS is really a cancer that is within the Arab world. And although, you know, they're the Rishoyim of the Rishoyim, but the good thing is that when the Arabs are busy destroying each other, they have less koach to be able to go after us. And that's also the idea of Mizari Rishoyim, meaning he turns the Rishoyim against each other by taking away their achdus. And then they turn against each other, and then Baruch Hashem, we're better off. Because they don't have time. In fact, I think the Katzvi Rebbe used to say, it's a derech rush. Pirkei Avos says, "Havi mispalel b'shleima shel malchus." Right. So we interpret that to mean that you should pray for the welfare of the government. So he learns this way. It's a drush. That's not the pshat. He says you should pray when the government is in shalom, because when the government is in shalom, then they can do things to you. When they're busy fighting their other enemies, they'll leave you alone. You know. So be mispalel b'shloma shomachas. Yeah, it's not the pshat, it's what the Katzke Rebbe said. So that's the second pshat. Again, this is still using Mizara as the scatter, but it's more of a message of Hashem weakens the powers of evil by creating and fostering disunity among them. Right? That's the second pshat. Now the third pshat he gives, again, as I say, the way the Sefer is written, the pshatim are often intermingled. They're not clearly indicated as a davar acher. But the third pshat is a different translation. That mizareh does not mean a winnow, scatter with the wind, but it just means makes them strange or foreign, like zor. And it just means that because Hashem is a God of Kedusha, He regards evil as foreign. Now that already is a stronger message. That already basically says that you want to gain admittance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's palace. You want to interact with Him. But if you're evil, it's the other way. You will be repelled initially because this is a foreign substance that does not have access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He regards rishus as zor, and therefore you need to be masaking that before you come in, right? So there are different ways of understanding this this pasuk. And again, the next verse is a pasuk that is often recited during Yomim Naraim. Mi Yaimar, who can possibly say, Zikisi Libi, I have purified my heart, Taharti Mechatasi, I have been purified of my sin. Meaning, even if a person can control his actions, but to what degree can we purify our hearts? Because remember, Mitzad HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our machshava is known to Him as much as our thoughts, as much as our speech, and as much as our actions. So, even if we do mitzvahs properly, right, have I purified my thoughts? Am I doing it l'shem shamayim? Am I doing it for gaiva? Am I doing it for ego? Am I doing it so people will think I'm a big tzaddik and the like? And we have to know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu holds us to account on a different level, on different levels, of course, not only for our actions, but also for our speech and also for our thoughts. Right? Again, I'm not saying, and avada it's not the case, that a bad machshava is as severe as a maisa. Like Chazal say, that's specifically not the case. Hashem does not punish for a bad machshava like a bad maisa. But just because it's not like a bad maisa doesn't mean it's not something for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to be better, right? If I have hatred in my heart towards somebody, that's an avla that I try to be misakin one way or the other. And who can say that? That's why the Emes Hadin, the fear of judgment, is a very, very powerful pachad in this time of year. Just to read one more pasuk in this unit. It mentions Evan v'Evan, Eifa v'Eifa. This is actually in this week's parsha. Evan v'Evan, two types of stones. These are measuring weights, like weights. Eifa v'Eifa. Eifa is like a dry measure, like a bushel. Now, what does it mean, two types? Because if a person is dishonest in business, so a person might have, let's say, a one-pound weight, but one of his weights is 18 ounces, and the other might be 16 ounces. So the way it works is, when he buys a pound of grain, he'll use the 18 ounce, so he'll get 18 ounces for a pound, and when he sells the pound of grain, maybe he'll use the 16 or maybe the 14. Whatever it is. That's called Evan v. Evan, meaning one measure when he buys, that's the larger measure, the one that weighs more than it should, and then another measure when he sells less than it should. Right? That's called Evan v. Evan, Eifa v. Eifa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates it. Again, simple meaning, of course, is this is a law in the Torah. In fact, the halacha is very clear, by the way. Not only is it a law to cheat in business, it is a law to own weights that are not accurate unless they're marked as not accurate. You're not allowed to own it. I'm not allowed to own a pound weight that's marked a pound if it is only 14 ounces or it's 17 ounces. I'm not allowed to own it. That is called a tayeva pashet. Now, if it's marked, then of course you could. Now, the thing is this. The Gra, as he often... Oh, yeah, now, the simple meaning, of course, is you got to be honest in business, and this is obvious. Remember that the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that the very first question that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask us after 120 years is Nasasa v'nasata b'yamuna. Let me focus on that for a moment. Did you conduct your business with emunah? That's the very first question. It is only the second question. Kavata itim l'Torah. Did you set aside regular times for Torah learning? Now, the phrase, did you conduct your business with emunah, there are two translations, but I hope you'll see they're actually the same thing. One is, emunah means honesty. Did you conduct your business with honesty? The other is, did you conduct your business with faith in Hashem? Now, these two interpretations are Hava Hatalia. Because if you believe that your parnasa comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then how can you possibly think you're going to come out ahead if you violate Hashem's principles? So if you're dishonest in business, by definition, you're not a maimon that your parnasa comes from God. So the two interpretations are actually the same interpretation. Ah, you'll ask me, well, what do I mean? Plenty of people cheat, and they come out ahead in business. Good, maybe all the mahabad will get punished, but they come out ahead. The answer is apparently, even in Eilam Hazeh, they're not going to come out ahead. Either their great income is going to be offset by greater expenses, or li'idach kisa, eventually it's going to collapse, like Bernie Madoff, right? I mean, so for some years it goes on, but then it collapses. Meaning there's not going to be a kiyum for this. There's not going to be a kiyum. Eventually it's going to collapse, not only in Eilam Haba, but even in Eilam Hazeh. So the simple meaning of this pasuk, once again, is Shlomo is reiterating what the Torah says by adding the word, it's a tayeva. But the Gra says another thing. The Gra says that this is connected to the notion of the hidden thoughts. And Eifa v'Eifa and Evan v'Evan refers to what we might call hypocrisy, in which a person tries to convey to the outside a certain measure of how great he is. Tzaddik, righteous. And in the inside of his heart, he's not that way at all. You see, that's the, in other words, and that's going back to the connection. Who can say my heart is pure? There's an eifa, v'eifa. The person is one way on the outside and a different way on the inside. And that's a tayeva. Now, what's interesting is, it's not so much, because this seems to be condemning, like the Gra, hypocrisy. Acting more righteous than you are, giving people the impression that you're a big tzaddik, when in fact you're not. Right? So it's a bad thing. On the other hand, if a person wants to become a better person, so it really depends on the motive. If I want to become a better person, well, let's say, for example, I have a tendency towards getting angry. So I get angry, but I snap at people. So I was makabeh that when people talk to me, I'll be besaver upon them, yafos. And I can do that some of the day, but some of the other day, I just get mad. So people might say, oh, you know, this guy is so nice after chakras. Well, he's not that way at all, because I see him in the afternoon. See, that's very different. There, you're not trying to fool people. You're not trying to have people, and that goes back to Hashem knowing our thoughts. You're not trying to have people think of you as a better person. This is just your process of trying to work on yourself. And you can't change everything overnight. So you do a little bit at a time. I mean, what are we going to say? If I have a bad temper, I'm mechuyev to be mad all the time? Because otherwise people will think I'm trying to be nicer than I really am? No, avada, you try to work on yourself. But you're not doing it to convey the impression to people that you're a tzaddik. That you wear tzaddik when you're really not, right? In fact, in that way, hypocrisy has a certain virtue. Hypocrisy, Alexander Pope, famous English essayist, said that hypocrisy is the tribute that vice pays to virtue, that vice is at least acknowledging this is the way I should be. So it all depends on your level. Now, the Gra then adds an interesting point, which he does not, at least this is not developed, He says, this is a, for a Baal Tshuva, there's another, he mentions Baal Tshuva here, there's another point to keep in mind, and that is, even if the issue is not hypocrisy, I want people to think I'm more righteous than I am, even if it's just I want to become better, the Gra says it's very important that you go up in madregos gradually and slowly. Because if you take a madrega that is way beyond your natural abilities, then when you fall, you will even lose the level that you were on previously. And therefore he says, Eifa v'eifa, meaning you naturally should be, let's say, a 16-ounce pound, but you create for yourself a 24-ounce pound. That's a te'eva of Hashem, because eventually you will lose the 16 ounces that you have. That's very important. And simple example. Let's say a person wants to grow in learning. So a person says, I'm going to be up every night till 4 o'clock in the morning. Or I'm going to do Mishmar 3 nights a week or 4 nights a week. Now that sounds tremendous, right? He's learning 18 hours a day. But what's going to happen eventually? Eventually, he's going to crash. Eventually, in many cases, the person's health can be adversely affected. And the HR is happy to have you learn 18 hours a day for 3 weeks, because then he's destroyed your learning for the next 6 months or maybe the next 2 years. Right? The HR is willing to let us have short-term spiritual successes if that sets us up for long-term failure. So that's what the Vilna Gaon says. When you increase your madrega, you go slowly, a little bit at a time. You don't do a whole bunch at a time. You do a little bit at a time, you solidify it, then you build and you go on. Otherwise, that's called Eifa v'Eifa. This is a famous word of the Chafetz Chaim. Very famous word. You know, it was Yadua that the Chafetz Chaim in the Radin Yeshiva used to go into the Beis Medrash after midnight, and he would shut off the lights and kick people out. He would kick them out or shut off the lights. And he said, this is the Maisa Yetzer Hara, because by ruining your health, you know, whatever it would be, you'll eventually be learning less. And he said, this is the Pshat in the Davening. We say by Mayriv, V'haser Satan Milfaneinu U'miacharenu. This is in Hashkivenu. Remove the Satan Milfaneinu, from before us, U'miacharenu, and from in back of us. So the Chafetz Chaim said, I understand the Satan in front of me. I want to do a mitzvah, and there's the Yetzer Hara that says, don't go, don't do it, blocking me. But who's the Satan in back of me? I'm already past him. Right? The answer is, that's the Satan that's pushing you into the Beis Medrash, telling you to do more than you're ready to do. That's also a Maisa Satan. And I think the Chafetz Chaim himself may have been speaking autobiographically. You know, it is recorded in the biographies of the Chafetz Chaim, at least the Hebrew ones, the English ones don't mention it, that the Chafetz Chaim had an illness or a breakdown of some sort in his adolescence, in which he writes that he was unable to learn for almost a whole year. Now, we don't know what that means exactly. What is it, totally unable to learn, or he learned simpler things? But it was really mamish a whole year. In fact, we have letters he wrote asking Tzadikim to pray for him. He was a young person. And it could very well be...
That was Chafetz Chaim?
Chafetz Chaim, yeah. It could very well be that the Chafetz Chaim pushed himself to a degree that it affected him. And therefore, he became very, very sensitive about other people falling into that trap. So the Vilna Gaon says it here. That's called the Eifa v'Eifa, meaning you have a natural measure that's right for you, but you want a bigger measure. That could be a Tayavas Hashem, because you could have a Nefila, you could lose everything that you achieve. Right? So there are two Pshatim. This is either a reference to hypocrisy or a reference to taking on a Madrega that you're not used to. You know, I think this is also the Pshat of the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin has the sugya about meat and milk. So it mentions that one Amira said, I am like vinegar to my father, who is like good wine. Because when my father ate meat, he would not have milchiks for 24 hours. And me, I just wait 6 hours, or I wait a certain number of times. So the question is this. If he's looking at his father, and his father had a minhag of 24 hours, so let him take on 24 hours. Let him take it on. And what, he had to have Ben and Jerry's? In other words, certainly he could have been... It's not that he had such a taiva for milchix that he had to have it. So why didn't he do it? So what he's saying is this. He's saying, you know, externally I could certainly do it. But my father waited 24 hours because he had reached such a level of Yiras Shamayim that it was frightening for him to take some milk where there might be some particle of meat after 10 hours. And the chumrah was an expression of an internal spiritual madrega that my father reached. I could take on the externality of it, but I don't have that yira. I don't really think after 10 hours, you know, I'm really afraid of some milk coming in contact with me. So for me, it would be a superficial thing. I could do it, but it wouldn't have the same chashivas. I would still be chalav gabi chamra, vinegar to wine, because for me, it would not be an expression of yira shamayim, meaning the minhagim and the chumras have to come from the madrega that you're on, not an artificial thing that you take on.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but this would refer primarily to chiyuvim and halachas. This would not refer to chumras. Chumras come from the yiras shamayim, not from the artificial. Yeah, when it's a halacha, then you have to, yeah.
How does one assess what's the level that's proper for the jump to?
Man.
Well, we have to go back to the earlier pasuk. This is mayim amukim eitzav leivish, meaning it ultimately comes out of you, meaning I can't possibly give you a single answer because it depends on the person. But I'll give you a test that I think is very useful. It may not. Let me put it this way. This is a necessary tonight. It may not be the only tonight, but this is absolutely necessary. And that is, if any chumrah is mafriya you in the fulfillment of your chiyuvim, it is a chumrah you should not take on. So for example, we have many chiyuvim.
What's mafriya?
It distracts. For example, we have many obligations. We have obligations between man and God about davening, about our learning. We have obligations between Adam and Chavera. And I include things like greeting people, the Sefer Panim Yafos, not speaking Lashon Hara, not being angry. If you find that these minhagim make you angrier, they create frustration, they create tension, you're not able to concentrate in your davening as well, you're not able to learn as well, they are not the right minhag to do. They are not right. Because on one end, you're taking a chumrah to serve Hashem better, but it's taking away from the obligations you have to serve Hashem. So that's one test I would give you right off the bat. If it distracts in my obligations, and if you're married, that includes the obligation of Shalom Bayis and your relationship with your wife and with your children, then it is not the right thing to do. That's it. Now, if it doesn't stare, so then there might be other things to consider as well. But I think that's the number one rule that you look at.
Every person has a fear, every man has a fear of Talmud Torah,
yep,
and it's for Bittul Torah. So if one ever takes on a chumrah that's going to take 5 minutes out of the day that they could be used for learning, according to that, would that not be...
That is a good question. But then it may depend, because like this, if it is a type of chumrah that increases your yiras shamayim, so fakert, it is brought down that a certain amount of bittul Torah is permitted, and not only permitted but recommended, to increase my yiras shamayim, because yiras shamayim is described as the treasure house that retains the wealth of Torah. Then the pasuk says, yiras Hashem. He otsaro. Yiras Hashem is the treasure house. The concept, it's not the treasure, it's the treasure house. The treasure house is the Torah that we learn. But the treasure house, that's the treasure rather. The treasure house preserves the treasure from getting stolen, getting dissipated, getting scattered. So without Yiras Shamayim, the Torah does not remain within you. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes in the Nefesh HaChaim that he was against, his criticism of Chassidus was although he never mentions them Chassidus by name, was that they were emphasizing Yiras Shemayim and Avas Hashem so much that they would spend all day saying Tehillim. He says, no, you can't do that, because all you're doing is you're building a treasure house. You don't have a treasure. But he says, at the same time, you need to have a treasure house. So in some minhagim, if you find that it's conducive to Yiras Shemayim, so a certain degree of Bittul Torah would be justified. Now, how much, you know, you'd have to talk to Rebbe Befrat in terms of that, but that would be a legitimate test. Those in Yonim that bring a person to Yiras Shemayim are good minhagim. But I can say those minhagim that give a person anxiety are almost always bad minhagim, unless you're mechliyev al smina kamakim or something. But to stop take on those minhagim, that would not be proper. So when people look at the Mishnah Berurah and you have the shyness of Baal Nefesh, this or whatever it is, you know, again, if it makes you anxious, you're not a Baal Nefesh. you're not there yet. Again, it's okay. You know, halvai we would keep the chiyuvim. You know, halvai we would keep the chiyuvim. That would be a very, very great madrega in and of itself. Yeah.
So is that a good rule? Like, even if it's not this chumra, this disturbing my fulfillment, but I'm still working on the Ikra Din in other areas, so I'll just wait on that.
Well, yes, that's a slightly different idea, but that ties in as well. And that is, Rav Dessler writes. Rav Dessler writes that every time we put our effort in one area, there is less spiritual energy in another area. So that's also important. Meaning, so even if the minhag per se would not be directly interfering, if it takes a certain amount of energy, then by definition, we're not going to have the koach to deal with that. So you have to prioritize. You have to prioritize what to meet us to work on and the like. And again, I want to emphasize that Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is a very important component. We sometimes don't think about that. But in other words, when we make a list of priority, you know, we're not necessarily thinking about, you know, how well am I doing in my Bein Adam L'Chaveiro department. And yet, that's a very, 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 very important component. Okay? You know, Rishol Slanta used to say a lot about, you know, during Elul, fortunately, it's less so today because people are less serious, but in Lita, Elul was very serious. People were very somber, and, you know, and they would walk around very, very serious face. And he would tell people, he says, you know, this famous statement, a person's face is a rishus rabin, it's a public domain, so, you know, you have no right to impose a sad face on the rishus rabin. And he would say, just because it's Elul, you know, you're being a tzaddik on my cheshbon, you're making it unpleasant for me, you know, things like that. One has to think about all of those in Yana. Okay. Okay, let's do one more pasuk. Let's skip down a little bit. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Al tehav shena pen tivaresh pekach einecha sva lachem. So literally, this is actually not such a difficult pasuk to translate. Do not love to sleep, lest you become poor. Right? It's again, simple meaning. You know, you sleep all the time, you know, you don't go to work, etc. You know, you're going to become poor, you're going to lose a lot of things. Pekach einecha, open your eyes. Sva lechem, and then you will be satiated with the bread that you need. You know, you'll have food to eat. Because your work will be industrious. Now again, you could be malakeh many, many psukim throughout the book of Mishlei. Shlomo HaMelech talks about industriousness, not sleeping so much. Again, sleeping is left off, because physical sleeping also refers to just a general expression for laziness and the need to be industrious. In fact, the most famous is towards the beginning of the Sefer, if you remember. That's the famous mashal about Lech El Hanamala, go to the ant. Lazy person, and look at the ant's wisdom in gathering of food. And as the Gra always does, he always takes these psukim about laziness and industriousness, and he applies them to Torah. And he says a very, very interesting thing. You see how the Gra sees in the use of words a certain code in which it's alluding to other psukim that use similar. It's almost like these are like almost Gezeres Shabbos within all of Tanakh, not for halachic purposes, but since these were written with Ruach HaKodesh, The, it may even be that Shlomo didn't realize this, but the words that Shlomo was inspired to use will tie into other psukim, right? This is not necessarily the kavana of the author, but this is the Ruach HaKodesh that causes these lashonos. And here, the Gra starts off with a pasuk that, fortuitously enough, we read in today's Haftorah. Okay, so it's very, very nice that we had the pasuk today. And the pasuk says in Yeshayo the Navi, which was after Shlomo, Lama tishgalu kesef b'loy lechem. Why do you weigh out your silver, weigh out your money? This is in Yeshayo, without getting bread for it. V'yegiachem, and all of your toil and all of your work, below l'sava, without being satisfied. Shimu Shemoa Eli, Hashem says, listen to me. V'yichlu toiv, eat what's good for you. V'tisanag badeshen nafsheichem, and your soul will be hisanag, will get the pleasure of being satisfied. So the simple meaning is Hashem is calling on Am Yisrael to do tshuva. Yep.
Well, the previous Mishnah, it fits with both Parnassa and Torah. I feel like we didn't do enough commentary. It basically says that if you fall asleep and you don't, you'll miss out on the Torah, you will not, you'll be poor. You'll be poor in your Torah.
I'm explaining. That's what I'm explaining right now. So here's the thing. Looking at the pasuk, he really starts off with the pasuk in Yeshayo. What is the double phrase? You give money without bread. You give yegia. You give effort without satisfaction. Money without bread. Yegia without satisfaction.
Why is money effort the connection?
No, the pasuk says, why do you give money and you don't get bread for it? And why do you put out effort and you don't get satisfaction? The two different phrases. Kesef below lechem, yegiachem below lesava. Two expressions. So he explains that there are different ways that people learn. Some people learn Torah by giving money. Now, by giving money, we mean either they support Torah, so indirectly they get the benefit of Torah, or they give money by hiring teachers who could teach them Torah, so they're not miyageya, they don't necessarily miyageya in Torah, so they approach Torah in somewhat of a superficial way. So the Gra says, those who approach Torah in a superficial way are not really zoche to understand it, so they don't get the bread of Torah, they get the straw of Torah, meaning to say, when you have grain, you have the grain from which you make bread, and then you have the chaff, which is the tevin. So, the first taina is, when you simply think you can buy your way to know Torah in a superficial way, you're not even going to have bread. You're not going to be zoche to real Torah knowledge. Because what do Chazal say? If a person says, lo yagati, I didn't work hard, but I understand the Torah, al tanur, we don't believe it. So anyone who thinks, by just giving money or whatever it is, I will be zocha to understand Torah, he's not going to have bread, he'll only have tevin. But there's another level. If a person says, yogati, I worked, and I didn't find the Torah, we don't believe him. If you work hard, you will definitely understand the Torah. But there's a little bad news here. The Gemara qualifies that statement. We often don't quote the second part. The Gemara in Megillah says, when do I say yogati below matzasi altamin? And for sure you'll know that only comes to understanding Torah, but to be able to remember what. But liukme girsa, even if a person is miyageya, I'm going to leave that untranslated for a moment. Even if a person is miyageya, liukme girsa, you need a special siyata dishmaya, which does not come automatically even from Yigia. Now, what does the words l'ukme girsa mean? So some learn it means to be able to paskin halacha l'maisa, meaning even if you know all the shitas, you won't necessarily have the clarity to paskin halacha l'maisa. But I see the Vilna Gaon himself doesn't interpret it that way. The Vilna Gaon interprets Lukmei Girsa is to remember what you learn. So according to the Graz interpretation, we have a little bit of bad news here. That is, when Chazal give us a promise that if a person works hard, he will find success in Torah learning, and that's a guaranteed promise. If you work hard, the guaranteed promise is you will understand what you learn. And that's indeed a great blessing. But whether you'll remember what you learn, that is not a guarantee. That requires an extra measure of siyata d'shma. Of course, unfortunately, the Gemara doesn't tell us exactly what do you do to get that extra measure. Mm-hmm. But that's an extra measure. So the Gemara says, this is what the pasuk, we'll apply it back in this pasuk. This is what the pasuk means in Yeshayahu. The people who think they just pay money for a good tutor, they're not even going to have the bread. They're not even going to have the Torah knowledge. They're just going to have the straw. V'yagiyachem. And those of you that are v'yageya b'Torah, so you will have the bread, but you're not going to be satisfied. Because without siyata d'shmaya, you're not going to remember. And the satisfaction of Torah comes from remembering it. And therefore the Navi says, Shimu Shemoa Eli, turn to me, turn to Hashem, seek extra siyata d'shmaya, and then two things will happen. Ichlu tayv, what you eat will be good, you'll have the bread of Torah and not the straw. And vatisaneg, you will have pleasure because you will remember. See how that fits in. So the Gra says, that is encoded in this pasuk. Do not love sleep, lest you become impoverished with your lack of Torah knowledge. Pekach, right? So therefore, what is it telling me? Be industrious, that's yagati. Mm-hmm. And pekach einecha is open your eyes upwards, turning to Hashem for siyata d'shmaya. And if you combine yagia and siyata d'shmaya, two things will happen. Sava lechem. You will have the lechem of Torah because yagati umatzazi tame, and you will have the sevia, the satisfaction of remembering what you learned. Right? So it's mamish how this is encoded, this idea. So be it as it may, it basically is saying a person needs to be industrious, you know. It is an amazing thing. It was like, so many examples, you know, like the story they tell about the husband and the wife. The wife was very unhappy because the husband, you know, they were married 30 years and he's never said a nice word to her, never did anything. So finally, so the therapist tells the husband, you know, bring her flowers. So he brings her flowers one Friday, and then he doesn't do it the next Friday. He stops. He says, I brought her flowers and nothing changed. Well, you know, nothing changes after one time, after 30 years. Things take time. You know, people say, oh, I learned real sharp today. You know, nothing happened. Now, when Chazal say, Yagati umatsasi tamen, they don't mean, you know, I had a real good 15 minutes, you know. I really worked hard these last 15 minutes. What happened? It doesn't happen right away. It takes time. Again, I can't tell you how much time either, but it takes time. But Chazal promises, Yagati umatsasi tamen, that you'll understand. Remembering, it's interesting, we have to find a list, right? You need a siyata d'shmaya. Now again, keep in mind, Yegiyah B'Torah itself brings siyata d'shmaya, but Chazal, see, it's interesting, the Graz Pshat, I think, is a little bit of a chiddush. If I remember, I think most Rishonim learn that the statement of the Gemara, that lo'ukme girsa, you need special divine assistance, is referring to psak halacha, meaning, in the Yagati Umatsasi Tamin, that includes you'll remember your learning. Mm. But to Paskin is a separate talent, and that you can actually see. You can see that there can be some of very great Rosh Hashivas even. Very great, who know everything, but they feel that it's not their role to be able to Paskin. To me, it's a shtickl chiddush that the Gra puts in that the lo'ukme girsa that needs special siyata d'shmaya is remembering the Torah. That's a shtickl chiddush. In a way, it's a little bit of a bad news that that's not automatically included in the promise of yadati matzasi. But that's how we learn. Lo'ukme girsa means that you remember what you learn. And then he makes a point that Rav Yaakov himself told me, not quoting the Gra, that remembering what you learn, and look at the words that are used, that is called sevia. The Torah that you learn is lechem, but sevia, the satisfaction of what you learn, is when you remember. And Yaakov told me that, befeirush, he told me that, and I tell people this all the time, that the main source of joy that a person has in Torah is when he remembers what he learns. So he has a knowledge of what he's learned. Because you learn, you go through a whole bunch of things, and you don't remember, you know, there's not, there's frustration. There's a lot of frustration, right? But if one knows, one remembers what they learned. That's why he held that Chazara was the Iker thing. And, you know, Chazal talk about 101 hours, but even putting that aside, I mean, you know, typically, many people in the old yeshivas, they would learn a Masechet, if they were learning Kedushin, that's not. They would learn Masechet's Kedushin 50 times. 50 times. It was all Masechet, 50 times. That's why they remember. I mean, somebody, you know, went to Rebbe Yashiv and said, I don't have a good memory. I learned Gemara 10 times, and I don't remember. Rebbe Yashiv says, what does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. Why should you remember every 10 times? 10 times is not enough. You do it 50 times and you don't remember, so we'll have to talk about, you know, you have a memory problem. He says 10 times. What's that? You know, we don't have the Hasaga, I include myself, of what Chazara is. But Chazara is the great, great Mavteach to the Sviya.
To remember
what we learned. So let's just do one more pasuk. And this pasuk is a famous pasuk also. The Gemara uses it in a lot of places. Ra ra yaymar hakaina v'yayzelai az yisalo. When a person buys something, and you know, think about the Middle Eastern markets. You have probably people who go to the Arab markets today, but in the old, you know, used to go to the Arab market, and you would haggle over prices and all sorts of things. So it says, when a Kona wants to buy something very precious, he's constantly degrading it. This is a piece of junk. You know, why should I pay $20? Uh-huh. He's trying to get a better deal. But ozelo. Now ozelo can either mean when he gets it cheap. Zol is to be cheap. When he gets a cheap price, or ozel could actually be, it's an Aramaic word. When the seller goes away and the buyer now has it, he says, ah, Baruch Hashem, I got a real good deal. Meaning, as long as he's haggling with the seller, he keeps on denigrating the product. When the seller goes away, the buyer says, ah, I got away with something real good. Now the Gemara uses this befeirush. The Gemara uses it exactly in that context. When the Gemara explains that a buyer will never praise what he's buying from the seller as long as he's negotiating with the seller. The buyer wants to make it look as bad as possible in the hope that he'll get a lower price. Now the Gra gives two pshatim. The Gra says this is actually a reference to learning as well. And he gives two pshatim. The second pshat I think is a big problem, but I'll tell you both quickly. The first pshat is that in Olam Hazeh, learning sometimes seems so hard, so difficult. And it looks like we're getting a bad deal sometimes. It'll be so much easier for me to go to the movies or to stay in bed or to have fun. So the person sometimes says, Ra, ra, yay marataina. Ay, 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 it's such a bad deal. But when he finally goes to Olam Haba, Az Yitalel, then he will see, he will be praised, he will praise himself, Yitalel, and what a wonderful thing. So this is the idea of Chizuk, meaning to say, as difficult as it sometimes seems, Torah mitzvahs, one should recognize that in Olam Hazeh it seems difficult, but when you go to Olam Haba, you will see what a wonderful thing it was. Now, Baruch Hashem, Hashem often allows us to feel this even in this world. But even when a person feels it's so rough, he should have chizik. So that's a good one. But then he says another pshat, which I have a problem with, because it doesn't seem that this would be the right attitude. But he says like this. He says, why would a koneh say that something's bad? Right? I'm trying to buy something from you, right? So you're selling me, let's say, these are different items. You're selling me 12 beads for a dollar, right? So I might say, oh, these beads are junk. Because I'm hoping that if I say 12 beads are junk, you'll give me 15. So take 3 more, take 5 more. Meaning, I'm denigrating what you give me because I hope I'll get more. So the Gross says, same thing with Tyra. A person should not say, Baruch Hashem, I learned enough today. So wonderful. You know, a person might say, with all the, every word of Torah is like wonderful, right? Baruch Hashem, I learned a word of Torah. Wonderful. It's worth millions of mitzvahs. He says, yeah. He says, so what do I do? I have to be stingy? I have to have billions of mitzvahs? Millions of mitzvahs. That's fine.
It's enough.
So he says, no. The person has to say, not enough. It's bad. Now, again, what bothers me a little bit is, that it doesn't seem that a person should say, in other words, the Gross describing it, a person says, oh, what I did is worthless, so I need more. It shouldn't be, it's worthless. He says, no, it's beautiful, but I want more. But he says that sometimes the way you get motivated is you say, nope, not good, got to have more. This is unacceptable, right? So he learns two ways. Either the pshat is, you suffer in this world and you get the geshmak in Olam Haba, or you should say, what I've done is bad, not good enough. And therefore, that will induce you to take more. And no, you remember, the Torah is described as Hashem selling us the Torah by our Yigia, right? Ki lekach tov nesati lechem. So I'm the koneh. And when the koneh says ra, he gets more. So I should try to get more as well. Okay.
Rabbi, do we ever do this with Hashem? Like Hashem, what is the... They wanted karka outside of Israel, Putzlar. So it's in a way they you know, like they were mm-hmm. saying, you know, like this is better than the one in Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be, yeah. I hear. But also remember that there was a group of Shevet Menashe that left Mitzrayim 30 years before Moshe Rabbeinu, and they were killed.
Benjamin also did it?
I remember Menashe. I don't know if Binyamin did, but
yeah. Thank you.
Okay, we're good.
Very nice. Okay. Ready? One? One should take in the shadow.